Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Susan, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, May 7th, 2026, and we are reading from the Big Book in the chapter More About Alcoholism, page 36, the second paragraph. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind, ending with, "So I tried another." Today's readers are Cara L., who will read the text, Vanessa G., a Vision for You, and Anne SCH is our backup. Jody E. is our newcomer greeter, and Leslie M. will share announcements. The reference numbers for Wednesday, May 6, 10 a.m. Eastern, is 23,439. And for Thursday, May 7, 7 a.m. Eastern, is 23,440. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I will now ask Claudia C. in California to please read the 12 steps of OA for us. Good morning, Claudia.
Good morning, Susan. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for your service. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continue to take personal inventory and where we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me read that path.
Thank you, Claudia. I will now ask Lisa C. in New Jersey to please read the 12 traditions of OA for us. Good morning, Lisa.
Hi, good morning. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous.
Would everyone else mute their line, please, while Lisa's reading? Thank you. Go ahead, Lisa. Sorry.
Oh,
that's okay.
Someone is unmuted. Okay, Lisa, I think we're clear. Thank you so much.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you. This is Lisa C. from New Jersey. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me share or serve. I pass.
Thank you so much, Lisa. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. Excuse me. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. All right, so today we're going to resume our study of the Big Book. Turn to page 36 in the chapter More About Alcoholism. The second paragraph, suddenly the thought crossed my mind. We're going to read and comment on that one paragraph, and I will now ask Cara L. in California to start reading and sharing with us. Good morning, Cara.
Good morning, Susan. This is Cara L., recovered compulsive overeater from Long Beach, California. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind that if I were to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach. I ordered a whiskey and poured it into the milk. I vaguely sensed I was not being too smart, but felt reassured that I was taking the whiskey on a full stomach. The experiment went so well, I ordered another whiskey and poured it into more milk. That didn't seem to bother me, so I tried another. Good morning. My name is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater from Long Beach, California. I love, you know, like, it's in italics, so it says, pay attention here. And the word suddenly, the thought crossed my mind. I used to have a mentor in this program that said spontaneity was not her friend. And that reminds me of this line here, the spontaneous thoughts, the sudden thoughts, the thoughts that I think, oh, yeah, this is a good idea. Might not be my friend, you know, and a little farther down says, I vaguely sensed I wasn't being too smart. And that would be the pause, right, for me, that vague sense of, wait a minute, maybe I should take a step back and ask my higher power's opinion on this. You know, those sudden thoughts, I'm full of great thoughts. I really think I'm super smart. I really think I know what's going on. I really think that I can do this. And that's what gets me into trouble. If I take a moment and I quiet myself and I say, what is that vague sense? What is that intuition telling me? Generally, that's my higher power's will. Right, that's that. When I ask for an intuitive thought, an inspiration, or a decision, that's it. Right, you know, it can be from anyways. Oh, I don't need to read that label. I have that all the time. Oh, just this once won't hurt. Oh, it's close enough to what I usually eat. Oh, gosh, it's a pain to ask the chef what's in that sauce. I'll just scrape it off and eat as little as I can. Those are all my sudden thoughts, right? These are great ideas. When I slow down and I say, God, please give me intuitive thought, inspiration, or decision. generally, you know, and it might be the same as what I was thinking, or it might not, but just it's that breath, it's that moment. That's what keeps me abstinent. That's what keeps me food neutral, is relying on a power greater than myself. You know, stepping, realizing that I don't know anything, and if I think it's a good plan, maybe I should double check. Step back. Invite God in. I use different words, and my word for this last few weeks is gather. Gather my higher power around me. Gather my higher power in, and then move forward. I'm so excited to hear from everybody else today on this amazing paragraph. Thank you for letting me share. With that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Kara. Right. Where are we? First of all, most important, today we are commenting on one paragraph, page 36. I call it a fan favorite. Suddenly the thought crossed my mind through to, so I tried another. Although we value your experience, we ask that you please limit your sharing to every third day, and that counts for both meetings, in order that others might share their experiences too. So what I need from you this morning, please, is your first name, last initial, and the state or country that you're calling from today. Who would like to share with us this morning?
Alex K.
Wendy M.
Mary Lee R.
Thank you.
In Oregon.
Who was that R? Sorry?
Mary Lee R.
Mary
in
Lee.
Oregon.
And where are you from?
Oregon.
Oregon. Thank you.
Wendy M.
I got you, Wendy. And Larry
okay.
G, I've got you. Thank you.
Did you get me, Susan? Alex?
I did. You're first.
Okay, thanks.
Sorry. Yeah. So
Jamie
I have
G
Alex,
in Michigan.
Wendy, Mary Lee, Larry G, and who else?
Jamie G in Michigan.
Thank you, Jamie.
Paul R. Good morning.
Sorry?
Paul R. Good morning.
Paul R. Okay, thank you. Anyone else for this first round? All right, so I have Alex K, Wendy M, Mary Lee R, Larry G, Jamie G, and Paul R. So first we have Alex K in California, and if everybody else could star one and mute their line, I will turn it over to Alex. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Susan. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Alex K. in California, compulsive eater, given a reprieve for today. This reading reminds me of something that happened to me once when I'd been abstinent several years. I had no cravings or interest in my binge foods. It was clear to me what I could and could not eat sanely. Then one day, I saw an ad for a candy bar, one of my favorites, in a new form, a smaller size, and I thought, I'd like to try that. I'll get some and have a little after lunch, as if it was the most normal, sensible thing to do, as if I wasn't a compulsive eater, as if the many binges I'd had eating that candy and other sweets had never happened. The disease gives me temporary amnesia and convinces me that what isn't good for me is perfectly acceptable. I put up no resistance. I went along willingly with the disease lies, but I couldn't see that it was the disease talking. I developed that strange mental blank spot and couldn't tell the true from the false. The insanity came back really fast, and along with the dishonesty and delusion, thinking I could eat just a little bit of my alcoholic food. And of course, it was more than a little bit. And it led to a year-long relapse. At that time, I wasn't spiritually fit. I was going to meetings, but I wasn't doing the steps, didn't have a sponsor, and didn't have a strong connection with my higher power. My recovery is stronger now, and I hope I won't have the thought that it's okay to have a little of my binge food, okay to hurt myself with food. I haven't in a long time. Or if I did, I would instantly recognize it as the disease and turn to my program and higher power for help. But there's no guarantee. I never want to take abstinence and recovery for granted. I know from experience how quickly the disease can take over. So I must continue being vigilant and keep taking my medicine every day, working my program, because I'm still a compulsive eater, no matter how long I've been in program and no matter how long I've been abstinent. I still need my spiritual nourishment and my spiritual team for support. So thank you for being part of that and helping me with my recovery. Together we get better. Together we can do what we can't do alone. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much, Alex K. in California. Next, we're going to Boulder, Colorado. Good morning, Wendy M.
Good morning, Susan. Hi, Wendy. In Boulder, Colorado, recovered. Of course, like everybody else, this is the fan favorite, as you said. So I want to say something I heard this morning. I loved it and must share it. Suddenly, I decided to do what I've always wanted to do, right? So as an addict, first of all, things have to be sudden. Like, I don't binge slowly. I don't sit there at the table and just slowly eat my binge foods. I eat them as fast as possible, right? So this thought has to come through, so there's no light, there's no God, there's no anything, there's no pause. It's now, and it's now, and it's yesterday, and it's now, and it's more, right? It's as fast as possible. And the reason for that, I sensed I wasn't being any too smart. Well, I have to say that I'm just going to call this out, that it's not about being not too smart. It's just about lying, right? That these are insane thoughts. It's the thought I had the other day. I mean, I mentioned the other day putting anything into a salad bowl and calling it a salad, right? I mean, I pulled pieces out of a apple pie when I was, quote, cleaning the dishes at Thanksgiving, and I called it in as my fruit. Like, we must lie to get the hit, right? And why am I lying? Because I haven't done my work in a long time, right? This is when there's no spiritual remedy. So what do? I'm looking for loopholes. What can I get away with? How can I be vague, right? Vagueness is exactly what the disease wants. And so, I mean, what's the remedy, right? I mean, and I just have to say also, like, I vaguely sensed, like, we're addicts. I know, this isn't rocket science. I know when I'm using. I know, thank you for share. I know when I'm pushing sauce off of my chicken and pretending that it's okay, that there's just a little bit of sauce there, but I didn't need to ask the chef because I'm pretty sure I'll be okay. I mean, this is really the thinking. So you know, what's the solution? It's the 12 steps, right? Like, I need to get clean and clear with myself, because we don't suddenly do this. This got premeditated when we stopped making the phone call, when we stopped getting on our knees for 30 minutes with God, when we stopped doing the step work, when we stopped sponsoring. Like, the less I do, the less I'll do. The more I do this work, the more I work with more people, I want to do it more. Why do I want to do this program? Because it feels fabulous. Because it feels icky to be Jim, and it feels fabulous to have God. You know, we want to be in alignment with our maker. And what's happening here is Jim was out of alignment with his maker, right? And so it's a good idea to pick up, right? Because he has the obsession of the mind. It's not just, you know, white knuckling, no food, right? It's the 12 steps. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Wendy M. in Boulder, Colorado. Okay, next we have Mary Lee in Oregon.
Good morning,
Mary Lee.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead. Oh,
yay. Thank you for everyone that does service on this line and everything that has been said so eloquently. I am just so grateful to be a part of and not away from. And I've been waiting for a cousin, just a beloved, loved cousin that we reconnected after a 60-year-long knot. And so she arrived, and I have not been around someone that has coffee till noon and then decide, you know, anyway, it was so enlightening to see my past in present form. And the seemingly unimportant decision that what we read in the big book, the thud, and I'm just so grateful that I have my food planned out, and we're planning a trip south tomorrow, and I will have a discussion this morning with her if she wants to have me prepare. She has macular degeneration and a bunch of other things, and I'm more than willing to. However, if she doesn't, I can take her to the local whatever junk store, and I'm just so grateful that I can stay in my own backyard. I don't have to engage in that behavior, and I'm just so grateful that I can't talk to God with my mouth full of that stuff, and I know I'm just sort of wandering around the page here this morning, but I'm grateful to be able to do the work, and I'm grateful to be a part of, and thank you all for 12-stepping me here, and I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Mary Lee in Oregon. Next, we have Larry G. in California. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Susan. This is Larry G. from California, recovering. And yes, you guys are my fan favorites. Just the best. Some really good shares this morning. Suddenly, this is Saturday for me. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind that if I were to have extra food, extra of my absent food, it couldn't hurt me. And so I had extra food. I vaguely sensed I was not being too smart, but I felt assured that taking extra absent food would be okay. And the experiment went well, so I had more and more and more. I had to change my absent date. I was 7 days shy of 6 years, and I have not had my red light foods, alcoholic foods since then. But I could see on Sunday when I woke up that if I didn't tell the truth about this and restart my absent, well, the bell was tolling for me. The bell was tolling, and it was tolling very loudly, and I knew that if I continued doing this, that I would relapse. And so I told the truth, and I started my absence over again. And what really pains me is that I can no longer use the word recovered. And I found that there was some ego around announcing myself as recovered. I'm recovered. I'm recovered. I'm recovered. And, I'm doing the deal. I get service. I sponsor. I'm sponsored. I have a food plan. I do steps 10, 11, 12 each day. But sometimes the disease comes out of remission. And what I didn't do was I didn't take God in that situation. I didn't ask God, is this a good idea to take extra food today? Is this a good idea, God? God would say, well, call somebody. Call somebody who's recovered and ask them that question. And I didn't do those things. We've got these little cute little acronyms, so many of Envision for You. There's one for SLIP. It's called Sobriety Loses Priority. I don't know who came up with that, but there's no SLIP in addiction recovery. You either relapse or you didn't relapse, and I relapsed. Because I had half the definition correct, which was not eating my red light foods, but not the other half. And so I've come up with a new acronym. You guys can use this. You don't even have to tell where you got it from. But I want to contaminate SLIP. And what I call this is RATS. And it stands for, this is my little acronym, my little contribution to Vision Folklore. It stands for relapse again, the same shite. And I use the word shite. I love the way the British use the word shite rather than our you. And with that, rats, it's over. I want to thank everybody who has supported me. I've got an outpouring of love and support that's beyond my wildest dreams. And so I pass it back to you.
Thank you, Larry. Next, we are going to Michigan. Good morning, Jamie G.
Good morning, Susan, and all my other fellows on the line.
So thankful to be here. And yes, this is a fan favorite. And I think it's because been there, done that for so many of us, myself included. And I just think it's hilarious. He measured an ounce. I don't know if that was in there intentionally, but boy, can I relate to that. So I could take a measured amount of an alcoholic food and that makes it okay. And it just makes me think of the most outrageous sort of nonsense that I justify. You know, I've done the same thing with poppy seed dressing. It's healthy. It's even in a different section in the salad dressing, you know, and I'll measure my amount as if measuring the amount of my alcoholic food, of those toxic ingredients, is going to make it okay. That's definitely crazy. Definitely crazy. Today, I abstain from dishonesty, and I abstain from impulsive food decisions, and I've written those out, like, and they're on the fridge. I abstain from comes in front of each one of them, like I was standing at the chalkboard writing my sentences to help me get my thinking straight. But I did an exercise, the lies the disease tells me, and I wrote those all out, and I don't remember how many, but there were a whole lot of them. And the way the disease works with me is it whispers questions to me, you know, and it goes back to the ancient story. Did God really say, are you really not allowed to have any? What about this? And find those little loopholes and little exceptions to the rules. And sometimes it makes me want to be willing to change my definition of abstinence or changing a food from the alcoholic or red list. In the moment, based on self, based on my desires and what the disease is telling me. But in any situation, I always have like three choices. What I want to do, there's what I want to do, my will. And there's what other people want me to do. And that's like codependence, I guess, letting them try to control it. And then there's what does God want me to do? And that's the thing. I have to ask permission. I am, God is now the director. He is my father. I am his child. And I have to ask permission. He is my maker, my manufacturer. He knows what's best for me. You know, I don't put diesel in my engine. You know, I have to ask God what's best. The thing is, I always want to be like quote unquote normal eaters, or I think I do, what I think is their experience. But really what it is I want to eat whatever I want to eat, as much as I want to eat of it without any consequence. But who puts whiskey in milk? It's just crazy. But I know that the more that I try to control the outside
of time
and like measuring that, thank you, and that indicates that it's a lack of control inside, and that's a God job. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you. And next we have Paul R. And I believe, Paul, you're in California, but if I'm wrong, please correct me.
Yes, good morning. This is Paul, a recovered compulsive reader from California. I appreciate Cara kicking us in. What a great paragraph, you know. On my last relapse, you know, I relapsed on something that actually was not on my alcoholic food list. And but it was kind of like a gray area. And my disease really loves gray areas. It's his favorite. What else I can get away with? Like, let's set you up to lie to your sponsor and lie to everyone and just have a little fun, just you and me. It's just kind of baffling and powerful. And he loves dishonesty. Like, don't tell anyone. Just let's have a secret. Just let's have a new secret. And because once I have a little secret, I'm off to the races. And once I'm off to the races, I don't care about this meeting. I don't care what you're doing. I don't care, like, who's going to call me. I don't care who I work with. I don't care anything and anyone around me. It's like, everything's going to become about food and eating, the amount of calories or 20,000, like, you know, it's a huge amount of food all day long, and I don't care about you. And it cannot be happening. I really needed to find out that food, alcoholic foods, for me, volume as well. Anything else besides, once I'm breaking my commitment to my sponsor, that's all is a relapse. I have to be constant communication and be fully transparent with my sponsor. Then I can have a chance to recover, to have this conscious contact with God. Because once I'm in the food, that conscious contact has become totally unconscious, and I don't know when I'm gonna get back conscious. Not sure at all, and I needed to find out that food is really on the way, and I cannot fuck around with the food anymore. I have to take this really serious, like my life depends on it. And I do that. I do that today. And, the insanity part has to be attacked every day, because once it comes to like, maybe yes or maybe no, or maybe I can do this, maybe I can't, I have to pick up the phone and need to ask for help. And all these men and women, it's here for me. And, I'm really grateful to allow me to share in this line and be a part of this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. Before I take the next lineup of names, everybody pause for a second. We read this morning the second paragraph on page 36 and more about alcoholism. Suddenly the thought crossed my mind through to, so I tried another. So if this is your third day to share, please give me your first name, last initial, and where you are calling from this morning. Who would like to share?
Regina
Jennifer P.
from California.
Jennifer P.
Regina, Jennifer P.
Don
Debbie
B.
O.
California.
Debbie D. And somebody from
Bethany
California.
O. Dawn
Bethany
B.
O. Dawn, thank you. Probably have time for a couple more. No.
Carrie W. from California.
Thank you, Carrie. All right, let's pause there. I have Regina O., Jennifer P., Abby D., Bessie O., Dawn B., Carrie W. I know where everyone is from. Regina, apologies, I missed where you are from, but if everybody could mute the line. And Regina, you are first to share, and please let us know where you're calling from this morning.
Yes. Hi, my name is Regina V, like Victor, from California.
Thank you.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes, thank you. Go ahead.
I'm a compulsive overeater and sugar addict, and I had 3 weeks of recovery, like a clean abstinence, and I was going on a trip this weekend to Catalina Island, and I had just finished step 12, so we had gone through the steps in 2 weeks. And I had just finished step 12, and my sponsor suggested that I not go on this trip because, you know, I was so, like, newly recovered or recovering, right? And I was like, oh, no. In my mind, it's like, oh, no, I'm not missing this trip for nothing. And I didn't pray about it or anything. And everybody, 150 people were asked to bring a snack to share with others. And I did bring some nuts, mixed nuts, but there was a room full of stuff, right? Alcoholic foods. And I'd walk in there and I say, well, I can have, you know, this and this. It's not that bad. And there was actually an OA fellow being in charge of that room. He stayed abstinent. But once I said I can have a little bit of this and this, it's not like really alcoholic food, game over. After that, I couldn't stop going into that room, and all day Saturday, I just ate everything. I mean, everything. And my sponsor actually let me go, because even after that, I was trying to be dishonest. Yesterday, I was on a OA meeting and then fellowship, and I was so exhausted, like halt, right? I was so exhausted. And I said, God, please help me. I don't want to eat something that I was thinking of making that wasn't really abstinent for me. And I was so tired. And when I thought, well, I can give this food to my mother so it doesn't tempt me anymore, it's like I said, well, since I'm going to get rid of this food, I'm just going to have three of these. And I did. I just ate all of that stuff that I wasn't supposed to eat and went to sleep. And so, you know, like the reading, it's just an obsession of the mind. And on Saturday, I never even paused, and I never even brought God in. And, you know, I'm just like back again, back on the horse, trying to do it better this time. And in the future, not even go into that damn room because it wasn't even my food. It's like, why are you going into the bakery and sniffing around? Like, why are you putting yourself in temptation? That room full of alcoholic food was not for me. Thank you. That room was not for me to go into. There was nothing in there for me. I didn't commit that food. So anyway, thank you for listening and wonderful shares, wonderful meeting.
Thank you. Regina V in California. Next, we have Jennifer P in New Jersey. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Susan. Good morning, everybody. Jennifer P, I'm grateful to be here this morning on this amazing meeting that I don't usually get a chance to come to. So, you know, when I look at this page, which is so kind of famous, and why is it famous? Probably because we all can relate and we've all been there. You know, I realized that, like, I look at the fact that the feeling then became the thought and the thought became the action. And I look at that because the preceding paragraph talks about, I felt irritated. This is how I felt. And then I had this thought, and there's the action. And, you know, I'm doing a workshop now where I'm just reminded, like, the feelings are wonderful pieces of information, but they're not facts. And also that, you know, that suddenly is my compulsion. You know, that's my compulsion. And I love this. It says we're feelings based, but like for addicts, it's like on steroids. You know, for me as an addict, my feelings, like if I base things on feelings, it's like being on steroids. So what do I have to do? You know, what do I have to do to not be taking food out of the trash, which is what I used to do, to find the spot that was, you know, still okay to eat, or to lie about my motivation for stopping at a certain store, even with my kids there, or, you know, to go to a party and think that, you know, I'm okay if I'm like participating in the, like I can be, have the appetizers or the hors d'oeuvres. What do I have to do? And, you know, it's work. The reality is that it's work, but there's freedom. And it's a spiritual process because my life can become better than I could possibly imagine if I do the work. And so what is the work? It's accountability and sponsorship, right? It doesn't have to be a struggle what I do. It's a choice. So do I have the choice? What's my choice today? And, you know, the other night I had something that was really disturbing me, and I drove around and I called a whole bunch of people and I text my sponsor, and, you know, that's what I have to do. And so today I have to take the phone call. I have to speak and do service, have to do service. I have to do 10 steps and my nightly inventory, which my sponsor kindly reminded me this morning that I hadn't done. And I can at first get prickly and say, well, no. Like, okay, well, it's only been a day or two, but I have to do it. I have to receive the feedback, and I love what the person said about abstaining from dishonesty and abstaining from compulsive decisions, and instead pausing and knowing that I can hold fear in the same hand as I can hold faith. I can feel uncomfortable, and I can do what someone else just said, which is to stop and ask God, sorry, what is it that God that you would have me do? And then the right thoughts come in. Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here, and I'll pass.
Thank you. Next, we have Abby D. in Michigan. Good morning, Abby.
Hello, good morning. This is Abby D., recovered compulsive eater in Michigan. And good to be with my friends today on the meeting. What stood out to me is, like, suddenly the thought crossed my mind that, like, my great ideas that just suddenly pop into my mind. Like, I need to check those with people. And sometimes I think that's not that big of a deal. And I can just, you know, follow that thought. But like yesterday, I was talking to my sponsor and I was like, oh yeah, real quick before we got off the phone, like as if it was no big deal. I was like, is it okay to exercise every day? And it's just like, I don't need to take a day off, or I don't need, you know, like I'm 3 months postpartum. I had a baby and she's the cutest. But like, so I'm getting back into working out, and all of a sudden it's like, I think I, you know, I can work out hard every day for 7 days, because it's just like suddenly that's what I thought was a good idea. And I'm just grateful because, you know, my sponsor's like, no, like, probably, you know, no, don't do that. Take some days off and, you know, be moderate and don't be obsessive. And it's like, oh yeah, okay, sounds good. And how quickly, like, the trajectory changes where I can then like just move on without being obsessive in that area. But it's up to me to be honest about like the thoughts that are in my mind, because they all start with the thoughts. Everything starts with my thinking. And yeah, so I'll stop there. And thanks for letting me share, Nicole.
Thank you, Abby D in Michigan. Next we have Bessie O in Colorado. Good morning, Bessie.
Good morning. Thank you for hearing my name and for leading and all the awesome shares this morning. My name is Bessie O from Colorado, recovered compulsive overeater. And I was thinking about this paragraph, and I was thinking about just the wisdom in this book, and how in the last chapter that we studied, there is a solution. You know, they're describing the disease, you know, and it says, you know, we learned on page 23 that the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. And then they go on to describe once in a while, so after someone, you know, makes that decision to drink again, he may tell the truth, and the truth, strange to say, is usually that he has no more idea why he took that first drink than you have. And once his malady has a real hold, they are a baffled thought. So we hear that description of the disease, and then we have an example of it. And, you know, this is just, it's such a standout example, you know, the whiskey and the milk. We hear the whiskey and the milk over and over. And it's a story that then I can relate to. It really happened, you know, and going through those details. And as the reader, you're like, that's just crazy, you know. But we have, I've heard stories today. I have my own, you know, that suddenly, you know, and for me it was, you know, the sudden things like, oh, I can have a piece of, you know, the carrot cake at the birthday party or something like that. Or, but it can just be more subtle too. Things like suddenly, like, oh, I can add a little bit of this condiment to my meal or something like that. And, you know, when I read that, I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart. For my disease, the antidote is just that honesty with someone else about precisely what I'm doing with the food. And boy, does that address the suddenlies, because when I'm struck with like the suddenlies, I can say, you know, I know that I'm going to share what I do with someone else. And just knowing that, reflecting back, I'm not alone as I face this cunning and baffling disease. Yeah, I think I'm just going to pass with that. Thanks for hearing me, and I can't wait to hear the rest of the share.
Thank you so much, Bessie O in Colorado. Next, we have Dawn B in California. Good morning, Dawn. Excuse me.
Good morning. This is Dawn B, recovered in California. I love this paragraph. It took me 34 years in the rooms before I was able to get abstinent for any length of time. Now, all thanks be to God, I've been abstaining for, 14 years. And people will ask me, well, what took the 34 years? And they'll just be, kind of aghast that it took me that long to get abstinent. And the truth is, it's just exactly what's in this paragraph. I was thinking that I could have those 34 years. I was doing a lot of experiments. I was thinking I could have my alcoholic foods, well, just at restaurants, not at home. I'm safe if I have it at restaurants. It's just not at home. Or I'll have it just once in a while. I've been good for so long. I can have it once in a while. And, back into binging I would go. And I kept trying these things over and over and over and over. And I had to finally get to the point. People will ask, well, what happened? Why now are you able to be abstinent? And for me, I had to get to the point where I knew that this was life or death for me. This disease will kill me. I had to take this as seriously as, a crack cocaine addict takes crack cocaine. I had to accept 100% that I am an addict. This will kill me. And if I accept that I'm an addict and accept that this is life or death, then a little bit of my heroin, a little bit of my crack cocaine is not okay. And it will absolutely take me out. And I had to get to that point. And I had to understand that that I am 100% an addict, and the only relief that there is for me, the only relief there is entire abstinence, 100% abstinence, and also that I can never safely use my alcoholic substances in any form at all, period, and stop, full stop. And now for me, consuming any of my alcoholic foods would be like stuffing my face full of rat poison. It would be that wise. I had to treat it like this is absolutely a controlled substance that will kill me. And do I want to play this Russian roulette? Do I want to load the chamber of the gun with a bullet, spin the chamber, and think it won't hurt me this time? It will. It's life or death. Thank you so much for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Dawn V. Kerry W., we have a minute and a half left. Do you want to take the minute and a half?
Sure. Kerry W.
Great.
From
go
California.
Ahead, please.
Okay. Kerry W. from California. Good morning, Susan. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for all your service, whoever's running this meeting on here, and Susan, for your lead of this beautiful meeting. Suddenly. I think anytime I do something suddenly, it's not good. I need to take that pause and really reach out or think about things a little more, use my tools, because I don't need to do anything in a hurry. And I've been listening to this meeting for since 2018, and only in the last 6 months have I started sharing, but I really have been helped a lot by this meeting. And last April, I went to Paris, and that's what happened. I had suddenly the thought crossed my mind that I'm in Paris. I have to try the food. I have to try this, and then I have to try that. And then once I opened that door, all bets were off. And yeah, it was really hard because you can't, I can't stop. Once I start trying things, I can't stop. And then I come home 15 pounds heavier and I feel miserable. And I came back into this program and started actually doing the work so that I don't have to keep repeating that cycle. Thank you so much. Everybody have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, everybody. Thank you for a super meeting. Our team for May on Thursdays, Cara L., Vanessa G., and SCH. Jodie is our newcomer greeter. Leslie M. will share announcements. And Lelon P. is stepping in this morning. And also thank you to Claudia and Lisa. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Vanessa G., will you please read a vision for you for us? Thank you so much.
I will. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for a great meeting. My name is Vanessa G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in New Mexico. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize that we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you.